Doug from Tulsa, Oklahoma, and I would like to give him a warm welcome. Please come on up.
Here's one right here, sweetie. Thank you. All right, let me set my timer because I sure like to talk. Good morning, everyone. My name's Doug. I'm a grateful recovering addict. I've done this a few times, but I don't think I've ever been this nervous. You know, it's been a while since I've been able to carry the message like this, and my disease is all up in my head. You know, my disease tells me, you know, that I don't have anything to say, that I'm not worthy to be up here, and if you guys really knew who I was, you wouldn't even want to hear me. But I know that's not true. I know that's just my disease. I'd like to start off by thanking Frank for praying with me out in the parking lot. You know, I think it's a big necessity, man, to invite God up here whenever I share, man, because it's all about carrying a God-centered Narcotics Anonymous message. I'm an 11th step guy. You know, I try to practice this program to the best of my ability on a daily basis. And let's start off with a joke. Maybe that'll make me a little relaxed. All right, so there was this guy walked into this NA meeting, right? And it's a big meeting. There was limited seating, and he looks over and he sees a chair empty next to a pretty girl. And so he goes over and sits next to her, and the meeting's going, and people are sharing, and there was a little pause in the sharing, and the guy leans over and he said, "You know, I'm here because drugs have made my life unmanageable." She looks at him. She said, "Oh yeah? Well, I'm here to get the parole officer off my back." He said, "Oh, yeah, what'd you do?" She said, "Well, I killed my boyfriend." And he said, "Oh, so you're single." Welcome to Narcotics Anonymous, right? Huh? So I'm going to tell you, you know, first off, let me thank the convention committee. I can't even, you know, I've been on my convention committee since my second year clean, and my clean date's 8/31 of 05, and so I've been on a convention committee, you know, for quite a while, and you know, when I first went to my first NA convention, you know, I just assumed that, you know, it started on Friday, so I figured they put everything together on Thursday and had a convention, right? You know, but then I got on the convention committee, you guys, and I want to tell you that being on a committee is heavy-duty service work. Sometimes it's even inconvenient, you know, to the point where, you know, these guys on this convention committee, you know, I don't know how far they had to travel to have their committee meetings. You know, with the COVID going on and the change of everything, you know, I'm so thankful that you guys decided to have this with all the things that are going on in the world. You know, I've had a lot of conventions cancel, and you know, I was crossing my fingers all the way till last week, hoping that this one wouldn't. And by the grace of God, we're here. You know, and so let's give the committee a hand because this wasn't easy. You know, and I have been fed this weekend. I'll tell you, I needed something. I've had a kind of a rough year, and I'll get into that later, but I needed a restoration of my spirit. So I came to Arizona thinking it was going to be 80 degrees, right? Because it's Arizona. I'm from Oklahoma. Don't make me talk like this, by the way. That's how it is. You know, so I'm thinking, and I'm looking on the, you know, I'm keeping track of the weather, right? But I'm looking at Phoenix weather, right? And so I packed, you know, everything I packed was, you know, for 80 degrees, 70 degrees, you know. And hell, I got out of the car, and it was like, we're going to have to go to Walmart. You know, I need to buy some clothes. You know, I bought a coat, you know. I missed it by a mile. You know, I'd like to thank my buddy Charlie right there, man. Charlie picked us up at the airport, and it's always, Charlie and I have become close friends, and it's always, I always look forward to seeing Charlie, and so, you know, when we got here, there was a friendly face waiting on us, at the airport, you know, and he's always the hostess with the mostest, and you know, he's taking care of us, you know, and I'd like to thank my friend Ronnie, man, for coming down with me. Me and Ronnie's my best friend, and we travel a lot together, and I just appreciate him having to hear me share again, you know. And most of all, I'd like to thank God. You know, I'd like to thank God for just the grace and mercy that he has shown me. You know, definition of mercy is undeserved favor. You know, and so, I heard somebody share earlier that, thank goodness we don't get what we got coming. You know, and I'm very grateful for that. So the speakers, I told you I needed, my spirit restored this weekend, and I got it. You know, I got it. Angie, Friday night speaker, man. Way to kick off a convention. Wonderful. You got my attention. You made me cry. You made me laugh. You did all. You covered the checklist. You know, and then I got to see my friend Joel speak at the men's meeting. And again, you know, did a great job, man. And then kicked it off last night. And then the workshop speakers that I've heard, you know. Every speaker I heard this weekend touched my heart. You know, I don't even have the words. You know, I was really receptive to what they had to say, and I was really grateful for the message they carried. So if you spoke in a workshop, I just want to say thank you. I want to say thank you. You know. And then my buddy Frank, man, kicked it off last night, you know, I needed some humor. And so Frank, you filled that position, brother. You carried a God-centered, you know, I went through all of the emotions as you spoke, and I want to tell you how much I appreciate that. I love you, man. And so, and Tommy, let me just shout out to Tommy. Tommy worked hard at this convention, you know, and even though I'm not putting him above anybody else, but you know, I can't even imagine having to deal with all the stuff that, with the speakers canceling and having to, you know, I wasn't plan A for Sunday morning. Matter of fact, I didn't know I was even going to be speaking until a week ago. You know, I was just coming down here to kick back with you guys like the rest of you, and it was like, you know, Sunday, Tommy calls me, and first Angie's Facebook, I mean, she's asking me questions, it's like, so how long you been clean? You know, how do you feel about sharing from the podium? And I thought, well, these are weird questions, you know. And then finally she said she was doing a little spy work for the program committee. And so thank you for that. I'm not going to get into a big old drug log with you, man. I'll qualify by sharing the last day I used with you. You know, I don't think it's necessary that I go and tell a bunch of war stories. The story is I lost the war. That's it. You know, and I'll tell you about the last day I used. I had been in the hospital for a little over a month. And there was something wrong with me, something internally wrong. And I didn't have insurance. And it must have been pretty serious because they had me in the hospital run all these tests for over 30 days. And finally, the doctor came in and he said, you know, Mr. Sizemore, we're going to run this last battery of tests on you and send you home. Hopefully this will reveal something, but we have no more tests to run. And so he ran that last battery of tests and then he sent me home. Home was a dark apartment in Wagner, Oklahoma. I was liberating electricity from the neighbors to the right. I was liberating my cable TV from the neighbors to the left. I had one legitimate utility, and that was my phone. And that's because my dad had that phone installed, because I'm an only child. And he just wanted to make sure his only boy was able to get hold of him. Unfortunately, that phone had a feature called, caller ID? You know, and so unfortunately, when my dad would call, I would see it was my dad, and I couldn't answer the phone because I was in the business of in the getting and using and finding ways and means to get more, and I just couldn't talk to him. You know, my dad's my hero. You know, my dad would come and visit me, and he would knock on the door, and I'd sneak up to the peephole. You know how we do it? You don't want to walk directly towards the peephole because the shadow will appear. And the person on the outside of the peephole will see somebody's there, you know. So I'd sidewind it, and then I'd just kind of run across there and see who it was. And it was my poor old dad, and I couldn't answer the door, man, for my hero. And so I'm in this dark apartment in Wagner, Oklahoma. I was home about 2 weeks, and I had used just the last bit of the liquid drug that I was using at the time, and the phone rang. And it was the nurse telling me that the doctor would like me to come and see him and talk about the test results. And so I told the nurse, you know, because at the end of my road, I didn't have anybody give me a ride. I didn't want to call my dad because he was just disgusted with the whole thing, you know. And so I just asked the nurse if she'd have the doctor call me. And so about 20 minutes later, and nothing happens in my God's world by mistake, right? Nothing. And so about 15 minutes later, the doctor calls, and he was very clinical when he was telling me this. There was no sympathy in his voice, no empathy, nothing like that. He said, "Well, Mr. Sizemore, you've ruined your liver to the point that you're going to need a transplant." He said, "You were going to have to be substance-free for a year to even get on the list." And he said, "And unfortunately, I don't think you're going to make it a year." He said, "So my suggestion with you is to focus on the quality of your life and not the quantity, because you don't have much time left." And like I said, he said it very clinical, matter-of-factly. I thanked him, and I hung up the phone, and I cried. I cried like I'd never cried before. See, I had come to the conclusion that drugs was going to kill me. The lifestyle was what I thought. That I'd be either in a gunfight, a knife fight, you know, a car wreck, something. I didn't think drugs was going to kill me from the inside. And so I just cried. And I cried and I cried like I'd never cried before. And I threw up that foxhole prayer one more time. "God, please help me. I don't want to die like this." And an hour later, the phone rings, and it's a treatment center. I've been trying to get into in Oklahoma, if you don't have money, they have what they call state beds for treatment centers. They're very few, and the list is very long. And so if you're trying to get in, the deal is you have to call them. Once you did your original intake, you had to call them once a week. And you had to be consistent. If you missed a week, you either went off the list all the way together, or you went to the bottom of the list. Well, while I was in the hospital, I never called them. You know, it didn't even occur to me. And so here's this treatment center, and they said, "Listen, your name just popped up on the computer, and we have a bed. I was wondering if you would, you'd like to come." And I'll tell you guys, I was as willing as the dying. Okay? It wasn't about coming to treatment so that I could, stop using. It was about coming to treatment because I just didn't want to die alone. I just needed to be around somebody. And so I told her I'd be there, and my dad, I called my poor old dad, my hero, and I said, "Dad, they got a bed for me at a treatment center. Would you come and pick me up in the morning?" He said yes. So he picked me up, and we took a 45-minute drive to Tulsa, Oklahoma. My dad didn't say a thing. the tension was so thick in the car that all I could think about was getting out of the car. I mean, I literally wanted to jump out as we were driving. And we get in front of the treatment center, and just as all I'm going to do is just get out. And I had my bag of, you know, it's funny what people take to treatment. I don't know if any of you can relate with this, but I had a trash bag full of nothing but tweaker shit, right? A few unfinished projects that I could probably do while I was in treatment. Just, you know, nothing that would even help me while I was in treatment. I don't even think I had any clothes. And so as I'm getting out of the car, Dad says, wait a minute, son, I got to talk to you. I turn around and I look at my dad, and he had a tear in his eye. Now, my dad's a gun-toting redneck, and he didn't cry. I'd seen my dad cry two other times in my life. The first time I saw my dad cry was when my grandfather killed himself. The second time I saw my dad cry was from across the courtroom when the judge sentenced me to the penitentiary the first time. You know, the disease of addiction robbed me of 11 calendar years of my freedom. Sidebar. So he said, you know, I don't know what's going to happen in there. He said, but when you get out, he said, don't call me and tell me you need a place to stay because you're not coming home. He said, don't call and ask me for any money. He said, now, if you want to call your poor old daddy and say, hey, Dad, how you doing? I'm okay. He said, that'd be nice because you had never done that before. And he said, I love you. Good luck. And so I got out of the car. Now, I'm going to finish this before I forget. I got to see my dad cry one more time. And 2 years clean, I was asked to share at my home group. And so I invited my dad to the meeting. And it was really hard to invite my dad into this world, right? Cause everything was going good at 2 years, but it was just, you know, my dad had only seen the bad side of my addiction. You know, and when I was getting out of the car, he said, you know, every time something bad's happened in your life, something bad happens in my life. Every time you went to the penitentiary, you took my heart with you, unwillingly. And so, shit. Forgot what the hell I was even talking about. Anyway. Oh, thank you, Frank. That's what we prayed about out there, wasn't it, Frank? So I invited him to the home group, and I got up at the podium, man, and I shared my story, and I got to see my dad cry for the fourth time, and only difference was these were tears of joy. You know, Narcotics Anonymous gave my dad his son back. I owe you everything. Everything. So, anyway, I go into the treatment center, you know, and it was funny because the person that was doing my intake, she was one of us. You know, she didn't indicate it or anything, and, you know, I'm going to tell her everything. I got people problems, money problems, legal problems, health problems. And she said, stop. She said, listen, you got all these problems on one hand, and here's the solution on the other hand. She just had one finger up. And I swear to God, I thought, and she was fixing to tell me, and I swear to God, I thought she was going to tell me about a new pill they came out with. Right? It's easy. And she said, and that one thing is recovery. Right over my head. I looked at her and said, what? And she said, you know what? Just go on through that door right there and pay attention. Good luck. You know, and later she was the same person that talked me into dedicating myself to one fellowship. One fellowship, and that's Narcotics Anonymous. Because she sat next to me at a table. And we were eating dinner at the treatment center. And she said, how's everything going? And I'd been to a few of every meeting. NEA. I went to NEA. Because I didn't have a card. If you were going to a meeting, I got in the car and went. You know, so I told her, I said, yeah, I'm doing good. She said, I told her about all the different meetings I was going to, and she said, when are you going to commit to it? When are you going to get off the fence? And I asked her what she meant by that, a little bit disturbed. And I said, what do you mean? She said, when are you going to commit to one fellowship? You know, and One disease, one program, one promise. So I dedicated myself to Narcotics Anonymous. I bet my life on the promise. Freedom from active addiction. That was it. Nobody told me you're going to get a house with a picket fence, you're going to drive a new car. Nobody told me any of those things. They said, what they told me basically was, dope ain't going to own your ass anymore. You know, freedom from active addiction. But with freedom comes a possibility of all those things I just described, right? And so I went in and I went to treatment. Treatment did its job. It introduced me to you guys through H&I. My very first day in treatment, and like I said, nothing happens in my God's world by mistake. My very first day in treatment, H&I was that night, and here they come, Narcotics Anonymous. And this was in August August 31st of 2005. The World Convention had just happened, and here comes these people in. And I recognized a couple of them, and one of them was my ex-drug dealer from about 5 years back. And the other one was my using buddy. And then there were some other people, and they came in and they carried this message, this life-saving message. They told me that I don't have to use again even if I want to. They told me I don't ever have to be alone again. They told me we do everything together in Narcotics Anonymous. And I bought into it. And only in Narcotics Anonymous can your ex-drug dealer be your sponsor. Right? I look back, you know, I pray for awareness. That's one of my big things. I pray that God makes me aware of the people that He puts in my life, because you just never know. You never know when one heart is going to touch another heart. You never know why you're meeting someone. You know, and so I look back on my life in recovery and realize that God laid out all of these perfect things to happen at the perfect time in order for me to be where I'm at today. You know, there's no coincidence that my drug dealer was doing H&I. There's no way. That's not a coincidence. That's God's way of remaining anonymous. And so they said go to meeting. So I went to my first NA meeting. And it was, I'm very socially awkward, by the way. If any of you have noticed while I've been sitting here this weekend, you know, I have very... a little bit of social anxiety, you know, and this freaks me out, you know. But so I went to my first NA meeting, and I go and I sit down, and it was a big meeting, and lots of people, and I sat down, and there was an empty seat next to me, and I looked around, and the only thing that I hoped for, was I hope somebody likes me. That's how lonely I was. You know, and so what happened was, the meeting was in this room that had a long hallway that led to it. And it echoed. And have you ever seen a Western where the gunslinger's coming down the wooden sidewalk with his spurs and he makes that noise? And the people are in the saloon and the spurs get louder as the gunslinger gets closer to the saloon door? Well, this is what I heard. I kept hearing this chain rattling and it got louder and louder and boots coming down hard on the ground. And so I was looking at the door and here comes this guy and he walks in. He was about 6'4", weighed about 300 pounds, black leather jacket, the chain down, you know, for the wallet. That's what was making all the clanging sound. And he kind of surveys the room. He had one tooth right here. and so he looks around and then our eyes meet. And I immediately look to the ground. And I hear the chain coming. And it's getting louder. And it's getting louder. And all I'm thinking is, God, please don't let him sit by me. God, please don't let... I'm ready to run out the door. I really am. And I'm really thinking about hard leaving that meeting. And so as I'm looking down, all of a sudden, here's these biker boots facing me. Right in front of me. And I looked up. And he looked down at me. He said, "My name's Rick. Give me a hug." You know, I thought about it for about a microsecond, and I jumped up and I gave that big bastard a hug because I was afraid of what was going to happen if I didn't. That was it. So I gave him this hug, and my face came right up to his man boobs. And so he pulls me in tight, and he holds me way past the expiration date of a first hug in narcotics. You know, I'm a sidewinder. You know, that's about as close. And this guy sucks me in, and I mean, and he got me right on his man boobs, and he's stroking the back of my head. And he goes, and I'm tapping. Okay. I'm trying to tap out. I'm in his leather jacket hard. You know? And he holds me a little bit longer, and then he pulls me away, and he says, "It's good to see you." And I could tell the look in his eyes, it was genuine. You know, I mean, this wasn't, you know, it had been a long time since anyone had said, "It's good to see you." Right? And so what that guy did in that exact moment is he saved my life. He acknowledged my existence in a room full of strangers. And by the time that little situation was over with, I felt like a 300-pound or a 2-ton elephant had stepped off my chest. I can't even explain the feeling of that, what that hug did for me. But I felt like I might be okay. You know, when he went and got 2 cups of coffee and brought me one back, and he said, "Now listen, you're going to sit right there, and you're going to pay attention. You know, I'm going to be looking around." He said, "If you need to go to the bathroom, I suggest you do it right now." He said, "And make that cup of coffee last, because you're not going to get up and get another cup." And now I'm like, what the hell? You know? You know, I had a flashback of prison for a second there, you know? I went to prison, you know, and so that's a whole nother story. But I was about as socially awkward in prison as I was in Narcotics Anonymous. You know, I'd watched enough prison movies to know that it didn't work out very well for this little white guy, right? But that's a whole nother story, and everything was fine, by the way. So I sat in that first meeting, man, and the guy did me a favor. He told me, "Listen now, focus on the stuff you can identify with, and not the stuff that doesn't compute to you." And so I did. I began to identify with the people that shared, you know, about, one guy talked about how he'd been in prison for a long time and lost everything. Well, I can relate with that. Another guy talked about how his mom didn't get to see him get clean before she passed away. I can relate with that. You know, so I began to identify with all these things. And I knew in that very first meeting, man, that I have found my home. I knew that I was in a place where I felt safe, and where I felt safe from was myself. I don't know if anybody gets that, but you know, my prayer used to be, "God, protect me in spite of myself." And so I sat through that meeting, and thus the journey begins. They said, get a sponsor. And work the steps. And here's the thing, you know, they should just say do the steps or some other thing other than work, because I don't like work, right? And so I can see where if you was to tell a newcomer we're going to work the steps, that'd be a big old turnoff. I think they shouldn't say that. You know, I think they said just do the steps. But anyway, so I got the sponsor, the one I was talking about, and we began to work the steps. And in the steps, what happened was this. You know, I began to feel something that I had never felt before. And what it was it was the hand of God. And what I mean by that was every time I worked a step one, and guess what? My life got a little bit better. You know, the pressure became a little bit lower. The voices in my head in early recovery, and I know I'm not alone in this. You know, the voices in my head for months telling me, you're going to fail. What are you doing here? This is just going to be another feeble attempt. You know, why are you wasting your time? You could be out going and getting high right now. But as a result of working the steps, those voices, the committee in my head got a little bit less. You know, they didn't go into a committee meeting, you know, as often. And so I started thinking, you know, there might be something, there might be something to this. You know, and I learned about the five spiritual principles in step one: honesty, open-mindedness, willingness, acceptance, and humility. You know, and those words sounded important. You know, my sponsor was a big spiritual principle guy. So, you know, the very first thing he had me do before I even started a step was, listen, I need you to go to the step study guide, and I need you to look in the back, and I need you to find where it says spiritual principles, and I want you to write down the spiritual principles that you're going to be working on in that step. He said, then I want you to find a definition for them. He said, first I want to know what you think that word means, and then I want to know what it means to Webster. And then I want to know how it applies in your life. And so he introduced me to the spiritual principles. And it really it was amazing. You know, I remember the first time I applied the spiritual principle of honesty. I was in my room in treatment, and my phone rings. And I'm thinking, you know, I had this routine. Like, while I was in treatment, I lived there for 2 years. I went to work every day, you know, I was real comfortable at treatment. I went through the halfway program and then the residential living. And so I had a routine, you know, I go to work. When I get off work, I come home, I kick back and I watch a little TV, and then I go to an NA meeting. And so I'm kicking back and the phone rings, and I look at it, and it's a number I recognize, and I just know without a shadow of a doubt, they're going to want something. And they're going to disturb my me time. Maybe even make me get up off that bed, turn the TV off. And so I wasn't going to answer it, but I put my damn number on that phone list, you know, and which, you know, I'm going to say right now, that's a commitment. You know, I don't know if they do that here, but we have a meeting list, and we pass it around for the newcomers. We write the phone numbers down, and then that way you can make yourself available to newcomers. And a lot of times, you know, and when I put that number down, I take it seriously. I better answer the phone, you know. Like, we don't like to answer the phone on numbers we don't know, right? And so, but I'm going to answer it anyway because I put my damn number on that list. So I answered the phone, prepared to lie, by the way, because I know they were going to say, what are you doing? And I was going to say something like, well, I'm in surgery, I'll have to call you back. Something to get out of whatever it was this person was going to ask me. But they said, what are you doing? And I said, nothing, just watching TV. They said, okay, well, I just called to tell you I love you. You know, and I remember that like it was yesterday. I remember that the payoff of practicing the spiritual principle of honesty. You know, and so then I, when I got to three, man, there was that word. A word that I was totally uncomfortable with, and that was God. And it wasn't that. And then as I looked, and I knew it was coming, right? I've been to enough meetings to know that eventually the discussion of God was going to be brought up. And I wasn't sure how I was going to be able to deal with that. I wasn't even sure if I was going to be able to stay in Narcotics Anonymous because of that word. And it wasn't because I didn't believe in God. It was because I thought God didn't believe in me. I had done so many things, you know, God, if you just get me out of this, I swear I'll quit smoking, you know, and something would happen, and I'd get out of that situation, and the first thing I'd do is I'd see a person, and I'd say, hey, you got a cigarette? You know, I mean, I never kept my promise to God. And I'd made so many, and God had answered those prayers. You know, and I always failed. And so I'm thinking, God, if I got to depend on God, man, in this deal, I'm probably in trouble. You know, but I hung out with some people that, and let me stop right here and listen, Narcotics Anonymous is spiritual, not religious program, right? Thank goodness. Everybody has their own freedom to pick out their own concept of a higher power. You know, but, and it doesn't matter if you're a non-believer, if you're a Catholic, a Christian, Jewish, you know, if you're a Buddhist, if you're a tree hugger, a flower picker, a bark eater. What all those higher powers have in common is this. They all send their addicts to Narcotics Anonymous, okay? So I thought, well, okay, I'm going to give this God thing a try. Learned the third step prayer, and that became my morning prayer every day. You know, I was terribly afraid to ask God for anything because I was just, because I couldn't keep up my end of the bargain. But, so, you know, in that third step, I made a decision to turn my will and my life over to care of God as I understood Him. And the thing was, I didn't understand God. You know, but I understood what God's will probably wasn't. And that was probably wasn't God's will for me to hang out with all my old friends. Wasn't God's will for me not to go to meetings. It wasn't God's will for me not to attempt to work the steps. And see, when I came into Narcotics Anonymous, you know, somebody told me this. Somebody told me, listen, if you're in this room and you don't have a sponsor, why not? You know, you're already here. You know, yet something brought you here, and it really doesn't matter what brought you here, you're here. Right? And if you're here and you do have a sponsor and you're not working the steps, that's like having the winning lottery ticket in your back pocket and never cashing it in. That's how important the steps are. So if you're in here and you haven't tried the steps yet, give them a try. You're already here. If you want the benefits of Narcotics Anonymous and the program of recovery does, then try working the steps. Try identifying with those spiritual principles. You know, I didn't realize how important those spiritual principles were till I got to 6 and 7 and had to look at my character defects. You know, and I read the step, and it was like, you know, became entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. And so I'm thinking, so all I got to do is just pray. Identify my defects of character and pray for God to remove them, and that wasn't it. You know, what I learned about 6 was becoming entirely ready is about identifying my defects of character, right? And ready to let go of them. You know, because a lot of my character defects were survival tools out there. You know, lying did me right when I was out there in that other world, and certain other character defects. And what I also learned was, and so that's 6. And my sponsor had me write my character defects out in 6. And then he told me, he said, okay, for each character defect, I want you to write down as many spiritual principles as you can think of that'll battle that character defect. So if I got the character defect of anger, right? Depending on what I'm angry for, I can use some acceptance. I can use some surrender. I can use some unconditional love. I can use some willingness. There's several different spiritual principles that battle one character defect. And that was my aha moment. I thought I had discovered something when I put that together, you know. I called my sponsor and I said, now I got some good shit to tell you. Right? Pay attention. You might want to get a pen and paper because this is really important, you know. And, so when I got to 7, you know, and I humbly asked God to remove my shortcomings, what it was what I'm asking God for in 7 is I'm asking God to help me practice the spiritual principles that I need to battle my character defects. It's pretty simple. You know, my opinion of the difference between shortcomings and character defects? None. They're the exact same thing. I heard an interview with Jimmy Kay one time, and he was asked that question. And what he said was is that they're exactly the same thing. He just didn't want to sound redundant, you know, repetitive. And so that, now, still again, this is one addict's opinion, but it makes sense. It makes sense, especially when I'm working a 6 and 7 the way I just described it. You know, humbly ask God to remove these character defects. So, I got into service real heavy, man. I found that I was at my best when I was helping other people. And so I began to do H&I at 90 Days Clean. I began to, I had a position in my home group. I had, I joined the convention committee. And just about anything that came up, because I was one people-pleasing fool when I got to Narcotics Anonymous. You need something? I'll do it. I'll do it. You know, and I'd make the commitment. And then, you know, 2 minutes later, be like, damn, why did I do that? You know, and I found out the true definition of commitment is it's not just saying you'll do something. It's following through with it even after the feeling in which you made the commitment in passes. It's like, damn, you know, like being having a commitment to be on a convention committee, right? Yeah, we're going to meet how many times a year? This is going to take a year, you know. How many Sundays? You know, it just, so, you know, and that's service work. And I think, you know, service work, all service work's equally important to me. But I'll tell you what my God wants out of me the most, and that's inconvenient service work. That's answering that phone when I don't want to. That's giving that person a ride to a meeting when it's totally out of my way. Right? That's just doing something that is totally inconvenient, but I already made the commitment to it. And so I'm a big fan of inconvenient service work. It doesn't mean you have to like it. That's like the spiritual principle of acceptance. Just because you practice it doesn't mean you have to like it. You just have to accept it. And so I began on that journey of service work. And I think I've only got just a few minutes left, so I'm going to tell you where I'm going to tell you where I'm at now. This year has been rough. This year has been really rough on me. It started with my wife leaving me, my significant other, my person that we were best friends for 8 years before we ever went on a date. Then we dated and then we got married. You know, we did it right. And I flew up to Los Angeles to visit a friend of mine, Jimmy Jam. This was last a year ago, July. And we, my wife and I never even had a fight, you know, and so when I flew back, she picked me up at the airport and she, before we even got off the airport property, she turns to me and looks at me and she says, well, I found an apartment. And I looked at her. I said, what for? She said, to live in. I'm clueless now, mind you. So I said, why would we want to live in an apartment? We just bought a house. And she said, not we, me. I just took me, you know, I had to fact check that. I'd say, now, wait a minute. What I hear you saying is, you know, and so I didn't expect that life on life's terms event to happen. And I've gone through a lot of no matter what's. And so she said it was just on a separation basis. Maybe we can work things out. And it was like I had no idea what there was to work out. And I tried to get her to tell me and she wouldn't. And so I got her some furniture, bought her brand new furniture, moved her into an apartment. And a week later, she moved a newcomer in with her. You know, that lived in one of my recovery houses. You know, so that happened. And, you know, and you know how it is. Everybody gets a turn in Narcotics Anonymous. You know, it wasn't a week later than she was in the meeting with him. You know, and it was just tough to swallow. I remember she told me she was bringing him to an event that I attended and I was of service of. And I wasn't spiritually prepared. And I told her, I said, listen, I can't promise you anything. don't expect me to act spiritual about this, you know. I said, so the weekend of the event came, and I got there early, and I was so disturbed, and I was so mad because I knew that I couldn't do anything. I had, what I do is when I got an issue, man, I reach out and ask for help. So I talked to my sponsor. I wanted just one person to say, it's okay to beat his ass. I'd beat his ass. It's okay. You know, just don't do it in front of everybody. You know, it's, I'm looking for that. So I asked 100 people. And every one of them bastards said, you know, you can't do anything. And so I get to the room early at this event, and I go in there and I hit my knees. And I just start praying. And I pray, I stay on my knees for an hour. And, I said, God, please help me to accept whatever this is. You know, please, I don't want to be like this. Glad to be here. So what happened was, I got up off my knees. See, Narcotics Anonymous is in the miracle-making business. And if you're in this room, Donna, we're 7 days clean. And you need a miracle, you're in the right place. You're in the right place. You know, don't let me, I'm going to be like Frank, don't let me forget to tell you something at the end of this. Please. It's about my health. Anyway, so that happened. I got up off my knees, man, and my heart was lifted. I went through the weekend totally okay. I enjoyed myself. It was nothing short of a miracle. Last February, I was went to a meeting on a Saturday night, February 8th, and a guy assaulted me outside of the meeting. And it was a guy that lived in one of my recovery houses, and he got kicked out for stealing. There's a lot more to the story than this, but the bottom line is he wanted to fight me inside the meeting, and I just didn't want to bring that kind of drama to the meeting. And so I asked him to step outside, not to fight him, because I'm not a fighter. And I was just going to let him know that I'm going to put your ass in jail if you touch me, you know. He touched me. He knocked me out with the first punch, and he began to stomp on my head after I hit the ground to the point I was unconscious. He broke my orbital socket. He broke my nose. Traumatic brain injury. I'm still not right. And to top all this off, it was on live PD. You know, I mean, why, God? You know, I'm at the hospital, right? This is how screwed up this is. That part wasn't on live PD, but when the cops came to find out what was going on, I was already at the hospital. They had the television set on live PD, right? So I watched him catch this guy that had just assaulted me. He went and hid out of his recovery house, tried to run out the back door, and they filmed the whole thing, and it was horrible. The whole incident was horrible. And then I had to go to court, you know, and everybody, you know, I took some hits, man, in Narcotics Anonymous, because there was a lot of people that felt that thought I pressed charges on him, and I didn't. A lot of people thought that, I brought that drama to the meeting, and I didn't. A lot of people thought that, I had given NA a black eye because all that crap was on TV, and I didn't. I didn't plan any of that. I was just trying to get the guy out of the meeting. You know, and so I had to go to court. They wanted me to testify against him, and it was a bad deal. You know, I'm still, and here's where I'm at today. Ronnie rides with me every day. I have my own company, and we go to check from one job site to another. And it used to be Ronnie just rode around with me to just kind of keep things in check. Now he's having to tell me where to go. I'm having to tell him in advance what we're going to do, and he's having to remind me where we're going. I've gotten lost in a city that I have lived in my whole life, several times. I've gotten into neighborhoods, man, that I'm quite familiar with and had to GPS my way out of them. You know, so it's very disturbing. I don't know what's going to happen over that. But I do know this, man, that God's got me. The fellowship has me. I've phoned a lot more NA on it than than, you know, I go to 3 meetings a day with 15 years clean and have for the last year. You know, I just want to keep you guys close to me in these unsure times. I don't know what's going on. You know, and then COVID hit, you know, and I'm sure we've all felt those effects, right? And so I'll close with this. So a year after I got clean, I had to take all this medication for my liver, right? And a year after I got clean, and I had talked to the doctor a couple of times, you know, just to ask me how I felt and stuff in this year. So a year went by, and I lived, and the doctor made me an appointment to come in, so I went in. And here's what was funny was he came into the exam room, looked me dead in the eye, and I hadn't seen him in about 9 months. And turned around, he thought he had the wrong room because I was a lot more healthier, you know. And he came back in, he said, "Doug?" I said, "Yeah." So we ran a battery of tests on me, and I went back in 2 weeks, and instead of escorting me to the exam room, they just escorted me to his office. And he was sitting at his desk, and he had this big ear-to-ear grin. And I'm thinking, we're all go for the liver, right? I'm thinking, good. I'm going to get this liver. At least that'll be one stressor off of my back. And he said, "You know, I've gone over these tests 3 times. I said, and each time, it's the same results. He said, "I don't even see any signs of liver damage." He said, and I can't explain it. He said, "I've been dealing with people in addiction for years." You know, he was an older guy. He's done this for a long time. And he said, "I can't explain it." And I sat down in the chair, and I began to tell him about you guys. And talking about that physical, mental, and spiritual healing that Narcotics Anonymous and God provided me. You know, and told him that there is a way out. You know, so any patients he had in the future, you know, that's a good answer, good solution. You know, guys, I don't know how I did up here. You know. What I do know is that I love you guys. I really do. I thank you for your kindness and your attentiveness. I thank you, the committee, for all they've done, providing the room, you know, doing the little extra thing. You know, Ronnie and I are going to be here tonight. We're going to stay one more night. We want to hit a meeting. So if anybody's from here and they know of a meeting to go to this evening, please get with me. And let us know where the meeting is, because we want to. I never want to go to a town and speak and then not go to a local meeting and get to feel the temperature of the local NA fellowship. So just let us know. And anyway, I'm glad to be here.